Welcome to A Skeptic's Guide to Conspiracy, a bi-weekly podcast dedicated to the examination of conspiracy theory, conspiracy fact, and those who promote these theories. I will be your host, Mike Bowler, as I examine a conspiracy theory, applying critical thinking and skepticism to better understand and seek out the truth behind conspiracy theories. The Illuminati Part 4. So up to this point, I talked quite a bit about the Illuminati conspiracy. So for a quick recap, up to this point, I talked about early anti-Enlightenment form of this conspiracy. In general, this was a backlash against science and reason. And then I went into the more modern version where a financial, political, and scientific elite is attempting to control life on planet Earth through various mechanisms, attempting to control the money supply, food supply, and ultimately through political means, creating a police state and curtailing or eliminating various civil rights. Depending on who's put forward this conspiracy, this elite may very well be a Jewish conspiracy or a communist conspiracy. And really, for all sense of purpose, this is nothing more than a continuation of the Christians' anti-Semitism. So on this show, I'm actually digging into the third version of this conspiracy, which is that Satan or Lucifer is either the Illuminati or controls the Illuminati for dominance of the planet Earth. The basic concept here is that, based on the Book of Revelations in the Christian Bible, in that there will be a period of time where evil will take over mankind and the earth, leading to the ultimate conflict between good and evil, with good eventually triumphing. This is a common thing amongst end-time prophecy evangelicals like Tex Mars. Personally, I do not believe in God, gods or angels or demons. This is and pretty much anything paranormal like ghosts and spirits. And it means that this form of the Illuminati conspiracy pretty much has debunked itself. But that would make for a very short show. So I did take a look at the end-time prophecy aspects of this conspiracy and the various iteration of this conspiracy. And the best I can tell at this point, that there are as many forms of this version of the conspiracy as there are end-time preachers. But there are common threads through this conspiracy that I will address. Now, first, at the top of this conspiracy is Lucifer or Satan, realizing these are one and the same. These terms are interchangeable, but technically Lucifer represents the pre-fall version, while Satan is the post-fall name. In the Christian tradition, Lucifer generally represents the light or illumination, hence the end-time prophecy connection to the Illuminati. Illuminati equals illumination. Now, in some of the versions, Lucifer is the one in control. Lucifer controls various demons who will influence either humans that are in power or will grant power to humans who in turn will exercise this power to influence those not under the control of Lucifer. And in most extreme cases, Lucifer has control over the reptilian space aliens who in turn control the gray aliens who then has control over humans. And it's the gray aliens' job is to either kidnap humans for experimentation or for food for the reptilian aliens and to give orders to the humans under Lucifer's control to affect or hide the activities of the gray and reptilian aliens. Humans that are under Lucifer's control generally referred to as the Illuminati. So basically, the Illuminati hides the activities of the gray aliens, the reptilians, and Lucifer's work on Earth. So in this form of the conspiracy, we have some very interesting concepts, and I want to break those down a little bit just so you can understand the conspiracy in itself. I tried to break it down into, you know, easy to understand components. First, you have when Martin Luther laid his complaints to the Catholic Church, the Catholic Church took very drastic measures against Luther, excommunicating him, tried to have him arrested and executed for heresy. And those who followed Luther's teaching and, you know, the early Protestant Reformation were, of course, being persecuted by the Roman Catholic Church. And this came in various forms, again, either being accused for heresy. A lot of times these were people who would be burned at the stake, executed in very gruesome ways. But there were states in Europe that took in these Protestants and actually became heavily Protestant areas, parts of Germany, England, the Netherlands, and from that came many of the various denominations under Protestantism, and of course, all these churches had a general rejection of the Roman Catholic religion, and thus, because of the persecution endorsed by and encouraged by the Roman Catholics, really created a very strong feelings against Catholics and anyone involved with that particular church. And actually, Martin Luther even claimed, as part of his why he posted his complaints, was that he believed that the Pope at the time was the Antichrist that was supposed to reappear in the end times book of Revelations. The idea of a Pope as an Antichrist plays a central role in the anti-Catholic conspiracy theories. This idea dates back to the Protestant Reformation when Martin Luther, whose complaints about financial and theological improprieties of the church had ignored, set off a schism within Western Christianity. Luther believed, following a popular conception of the day, which during the end times Satan would work to corrupt the church. Luther believed that the institution of the papacy was that corrupting influence, and borrowing the term from the first and second letters of John, he called it Antichrist. Luther produced a series of wood carvings with side-by-side depictions of the Pope, labeled as Antichristus and Jesus, in which the Pope was doing the opposite of Jesus. That is, in one carving, Jesus is washing the feet of the poor, while the Pope is having his feet washed by the poor. So there's always been, within the more radical religions here in the United States and probably in Europe, but it seems to be more prevalent here in the States, that the Catholic Church and the Pope represents somewhat satanic origin, or definitely is really almost anti or opposite of what Christianity is supposed to be. And this is all based on theology and the basic concepts of the various religions involved. So as I've gone through a lot of these end time prophecies, a lot of times there is the mix with the Catholic Church as being part of this bringing on the end times and the return of Jesus. Another aspect of this conspiracy has to do with the elites. Now, in general conversation, like if you listen to a Alex Jones or a Glenn Beck, any of those radio programs that like to talk about the New World Order or the Illuminati conspiracies, they always talk about these elites. And the question should be, who are these elites? Basically, part of the tactic is you keep mentioning these elites, and of course, you can always buy the book that gives you the list of all these elite families. Now, again, based on a Bible verse, there are supposed to be 13 families involved with the end times and the end of the earth type stuff. And these 13 families are, quote unquote, the richest people on the planet. Now, I've got a list here, and I'm going to read off the names. You'll probably recognize a few of them. Now, depending on the website you go to, they'll be in different orders. They might mix a few names around. I like this one. The site I looked at and I'm quoting from actually adds a few extra to the list because, you know, 13 wasn't enough, though if you're going to have 13 families controlling the world, you got to leave somebody out. Of course, this site doesn't want to do that. But here's the list, and these are the big 13. The Rockefeller family, the Rothschild family, the Kennedy family, the Astor family, the Bundy family, the Collins family, the DuPont family, the Freeman family, the Lee family, that's L-I, it's a Chinese family, the Onassis family, the Reynolds family, the Russell family, and the Van Dyne family, or Van Dunn family. Now, again, this is a continuation of the list, and other connected, interconnected families are the Disneys, the Krupps, and the McDonalds. Now, most of these families are not well-known and probably are totally not even worth exploring too much. I was kind of curious about the Li family. This is a Chinese family in China, and I will talk a little bit about them in a little bit, because I thought it was kind of interesting that that these families weren't European or North American. But the big two is the Rockefeller family and the Rothschilds family. Now, the Rockefellers, it's an interesting story. I'd actually like to do a whole show on the Rockefellers, because they've been blamed for so many things wrong in this country, and it's their money that made it that way. But for this show, I want to stick to some of the facts, but actually why they really are not, the reason why they're on the list. Because really the biggest target has been John David Rockefeller, who was the patriarch, where the money was made. And Rockefeller made this money through his corporation, Standard Oil of Ohio. And this was in the days of the robber barons. Now, Rockefeller was very ruthless in his business dealings. I mean, today we would actually call it predatory, or we might call it unethical. But at that time, there were very few ethics in business. And he built this company in the time of the laissez-faire that was government hands off of business. Let business regulate itself. And one of the tactics Rockefeller used was to get his products sold. Was to go into a town, find a oil company, because at the time he was building his business, there were hundreds of little mom-and-pop oil companies who would buy products from whoever. There were a number of refineries, refiners, and the big product was kerosene at the time. And Rockefeller would go into this town and find one of these mom-and-pops and offer them a deal. And this deal usually involved, he'd buy the company from the owner, and this would be a cash and a stock deal where you become owner of the company. Most of the time the owner of the company would then become the manager of that store. And the idea was just to sell Standard Oil products. And it was actually a very sweet deal. Rockefeller was paying usually a lot of times more than what the company really was worth. But the idea was that he can get his products into every town in the country. And but then that sometimes didn't work. Call it pride, call it whatever. The mom and pop may not want to sell. This is a business they built from scratch. They had a very good, fairly lucrative business. They were living comfortably, whatever. So they would turn down the offer. Now, realizing, you know, when you look at it today, anyone who would turn down a Rockefeller offer on your company, that would be the biggest financial mistake you would ever make in your life, because between the cash, you kept your job, and you had a stock that paid dividends, you would make a small fortune and, you know, still live probably even better than what you would have if you kept the company and Rockefeller had no interest in you. So if you didn't sell, Rockefeller might find either another mom and pop in that same town. But if you were the only one there, Rockefeller would just set a company up in that town, undercut the competition, basically run the little mom and pop out of business because they can't compete with the price. Rockefeller, with the advantages of scale, could produce kerosene much cheaper than most refiners could. And of course he could sell and, you know, take, you know, it wasn't out of the question at the time to undercut your competition, sell your product cheaper. You can also do it with a cheaper and a better product, which is usually the case. Most independent refiners at the time was not producing a very fine quality of kerosene. Rockefeller was. Actually, it was quite dangerous sometimes to use an independent refiner's kerosene. But Rockefeller was offering a better product at a cheaper price. Competition just melted away. They would have to file bankruptcy, or if they did manage to sell out, they would never get the money that a pump company was really worth, which basically left a lot of people who had gone through that experience, those that didn't want to sell, really destroyed their lives. Now, it wasn't Rockefeller's fault that they didn't want to sell. But, of course, we don't want to blame ourselves and our mistakes, so let's blame Rockefeller. And that's really where the animosity toward J.D. Rockefeller comes from. The other aspect of Rockefeller, why there's animosity, was after he passed away. Now, Rockefeller made a lot of money running his companies, and even when the trust that he created for Standard Oil was broken up, and the Standard Oil was broken into roughly about 30-some different companies, Rockefeller still had controlling interest in all these companies. He still held stocks. That breakup made him more money than if he would have kept all those companies together. And that money ended up in a philanthropic foundation, the Rockefeller Foundation. And that money is used for research. And much of this research is into basically projects to better the human condition. Many of their projects were how to deal with famines, how to get more yield out of corn or wheat or oats or whatever the prevailing study was. A lot of money was pumped into research, into medical research, like into vaccinations and antibiotics and all sorts of procedures that saved lives. And it was rarely questioned, but I think one of the interesting was the Kinsey Report, where Dr. Kinsey did his study on human sexuality. And his first book about men's sexuality was a big hit. And the study, and it had exposed some interesting aspects of human sexuality. It was probably one of the first and probably the most extensive looks into the American male sex practices. He then produced a book on female sexual practices and got into a lot of trouble. Actually, almost to a point where the Rockefellers were getting death threats. That how could that you allow this guy to put out a book exposing women's sexuality? Women were not sexual items. They weren't sexual beings. They were sexual items. But these were that the women were just as active sexually as men were, and this bothered a lot of Victorian, stuck-up Americans, that we don't expose our women to such. I mean, even the idea of questioning women about their sexual practices was an abomination. And this probably is, again, more ammunition in the hands of the anti-Rockefeller group. So anything that the Rockefellers did was to be questioned. And later on, when in the 1940s, when the United Nations were being contemplated and how they were going to implement and where they would meet and so on, Nelson Rockefeller donated land where they would build the United Nations building. And this is where a lot of the conspiracy people link Rockefeller to an Illuminati conspiracy, that Rockefeller is trying to promote a one-world government, and doing that through financially assisting the United Nations in getting its start, getting a building where they can meet, and so on. So really, I mean, as far as I'm concerned, and from the evidence and the history of the Rockefellers, this is really just people who just don't like the Rockefellers, and this has been something that's kind of that hung along with, and anybody who makes money in this country, who makes a lot of money, will catch a lot of angry people. People just don't like how they do business, the businesses they're in, and tend to blame corporate people for a lot of the problems. Now, there's definitely issues. I mean, today we do see like the Koch brothers and their financing the opposition to climate change legislation and so on, that they have been supporting a number of candidates to oppose any fixes to climate change. And mostly that's because most of their business involves dealing with products that produce pollution. So not saying all of them are squeaky clean. And actually, really, even Rockefeller did play it sleazy with his when he built his business up. But it's really not. It's one of those where at the time it wasn't really, there was no regulation. There was nothing stopping him from doing what he did. And with the idea that nowadays we kind of frown upon that type of predatory marketing. And the second family has been the Rothschild family. Now, there's a lot of things that have been blamed on Rothschilds. Mostly, a lot of them are, again, a lot of predatory banking and taking advantage. But unfortunately, most of it isn't true. Yes, the Rothschilds had a very lucrative business in Europe and had actually opened banking branches in England, France, Germany, Italy, and had built a very sizable fortune. And their experience as in international banking gave them some credibility, and many times they would, various family members would find themselves as part of the various central banks in Europe. Now, central banking is another catchphrase, maybe not necessarily a catchphrase, but it's one of how the Illuminati controls the world. This is where the banking part of the conspiracy fits in. And it's the belief that by controlling the money, you can control the government and you can control the people. And you do that through central banking. Now, again, I think it'd be a great idea to do a show just on the Federal Reserve. That's our central bank here in the United States, and how the central banks of around the world operate. But for this discussion, the idea is that by controlling, because the central banks, in a sense, not only regulate the economies of the countries that they're associated with, but they're also involved with international transactions. Money going between the United States and England, France, ends up passing through the Federal Reserve and so on. That's how countries transfer money back and forth between each other, amongst other ways to get dollars to China, to Asia, any of these places that they need to go to. And since the central banks also have the ability to manipulate money supply, they can it has the ability to create the rate of exchange between these countries. So it's really a very fairly unique way or unique system, quite efficient to get money back and forth. But again, this is all part of a control grid, as Alex Jones might say it, where by controlling the money supply, the money flow, you can control the economies, which eventually you can manipulate your governments, you can manipulate your industries, so on, ultimately controlling the population within your country. And the belief that because the Rothschilds control so many central banks, which they really don't, they don't have much say, but they're part of it, that this is all part of this Illuminati, one world government, one world economy, the globalism system. And that's really what is the driving force behind the Rothschilds in this list. Now, the Lee family, apparently their only connection to this is that they were friends with the Rockefellers. Families like the Bundy family, the Collins family, the Freeman family, the Reynolds, the Russell, and the Van Dunn. These are just people with a lot of money. let's put them in the list. We need 13. Let's throw them in there. Again, the Onassis is another one of these. The DuPont family, I believe they've gotten on the list because one of their big businesses has been explosives and munitions, and were very prominent in the First World War and the investigations after the war on war profiteering. Gerald Nye, who was a Democrat from the North Dakota in the 1930s, headed up a committee to look at war profiteering during the First World War. Part of its findings was that while there was no profiteering, some companies did make out very well, selling to the Germans, selling to belligerents, selling to our enemies. And an interesting side note to this is another place where John T. Flynn comes into the scene. Flynn was an associate of Nye, and had actually, when the investigation was over and they were going to develop legislation on how to regulate the munitions industry, John T. Flynn claims, and there's been some claims, I'm not exactly 100% sure because I don't really find a lot of evidence, but Nye and Flynn makes the claim that John T. Flynn wrote the legislation that regulated the munition industry, and oddly enough, probably did more damage to the United States militarily than it, and actually probably it basically created an atmosphere where industry did not want to deal with the United States government to produce munitions. It's actually an interesting story. I could go into it a little bit because it wasn't so much the government buying weapons. It's when it came to asking industry to develop a new weapon, where if the Army needed a new truck or some type of tank or something like that, because of the legislation in place, or before the legislation, the company could, they would develop what they thought would be a good idea, develop a, if the U.S. needed a new tank, they would put something together, test it out, run it through trials with the Army. If the Army liked it, they would place an order. But if they didn't place an order, under law, the Army would still pay for the prototyping and the testing of that weapon. Under the new legislation, there were caps on what could be paid out on those contracts. So in many cases, manufacturers, if were presented with a, hey, we need a, and actually when they wanted a field car that would eventually be, we would call it today the Jeep. Ford didn't want to have anything to do with it. General Motors wanted nothing to do with it. Willys Overland was hurting financially. We're talking about the Great Depression, and they were one of the few that produced a prototype. And it wouldn't, but roughly when it was ordered and was approved, someone in Washington decided, well, we can't let it all be built by Willys. So they wanted Ford to build Jeeps. And Ford actually did not want to build Jeeps for the military. And this was in the late 30s, early 40s. War was now breaking out in Europe. The U.S. government was now needing munitions, not only for themselves, but to sell to the belligerents. And Ford did not want to produce anything. Actually, I believe Ford was eventually forced into making Jeeps. And oddly enough, I think if I remember right, the Willys was, the contract was taken away from them and given to General Motors. So, I probably got that wrong, but, the problems with, it's part of the military industrial complex. DuPont was a major player. Many people believe DuPont was probably as responsible for getting us into a war, which DuPont really doesn't care. They'll sell their stuff to anybody. There were no rules, very few rules about, and under neutrality rules, again, DuPont was able to, had very little problem selling their products. But of course, the idea that, it's an evil corporation, they deal with weapons, explosives, so on, they're part of what's bad. They're the part of Illuminati. And of course, they made fortunes off of people being killed. So I've talked about the religious aspect. I've talked a bit about the 13 families and who was supposed to be Illuminati. I'd like to start maybe wrapping things up a little bit more tighter here and kind of come up with some conclusions. So to kind of wrap up and kind of close out this series on the Illuminati and New World Order, I kind of like to think of things in this particular conspiracy kind of like a James Bond movie, 007 put to a task to find the evil genius who wants to take over the world. We enjoy these types of stories. There's a bad guy. He wants to blow up the Earth. He wants to, do whatever, hold the planet for ransom. And James Bond goes through and he investigates and he finds out who's who and who's doing what, eventually finding the bad guy, chase him down to his lair, have a big fight, save the world. And we do kind of like to enjoy it. We do enjoy these stories. James Bond is fairly popular on television, but we definitely enjoy these type of shows and these stories. And this Illuminati New World Order is kind of like that. We've got these secret organizations. We've got these elites, the 13 families. We've got the Vatican, got the Bilderbergs. We've got Skull and Bones. We've got the Trilateral Commission, the Council on Foreign Relations, the United Nations, all conspiring to do something. What they're trying to do, your guess is as good as mine, because they don't seem to be doing anything. Now, we do have this thing about, there's definitely a thing with secret societies, the Freemasons, Skull and Bones, the Bilderberg Group. All of these guys, they meet behind closed doors. We don't know what they're really saying or doing behind those doors. So they have to be, of course, to the conspiracy types, they have to be doing something bad. Now, I don't know much about what goes on behind the door of a Mason's Lodge, but I do know that the Bilderberg Group, they meet to discuss world issues. The original meeting was that in post-war Europe, there was a serious concern about the communists taking over Western Europe. But there was a lot of animosity toward the United States. So the idea was to get both sides of the Atlantic together, United States, Europe, to figure out how to better integrate, how to be more, believe a lot of it had to do with being more economically work together, militarily, and just kind of throw ideas around about how to alleviate some of the problems of, and at the time, in particular, communism. Communism was rapidly expanding and beginning to gain traction in Africa, South America, and Asia. So by bringing everyone together, they could discuss world problems, maybe have some solutions, and doing it without having to commit. The idea is that when a presenter presents a paper, and that's what they usually do at these Bilderberg meetings, they'll do a paper on, let's say, Africa and the problems there. No names are ever tagged to that paper. Actually, no one really knows who wrote the paper, who was involved with it, but these are just ideas that are to be pondered. And a lot of times, famous people will do that. They will say things that may not sound too, but sometimes people will say things that doesn't sound too ethical or moral or even legal. And you can get in a lot of trouble for saying stuff like that. But if these are ideas that are viable, certainly you want to throw those ideas out in hopes to someone either improving or making it less illegal or moral or ethical. or just reject it outright. And that's been a problem with Holdren, who has been accused of wanting to kill off people. So again, dealing with a world who's trying to solve problems, who's trying to understand their the world, trying to make it better. The ideas, many of the concepts that we've tried and we've got in place. The United Nations is one of them. Americans have always had, there's always been a group of Americans who have been opposed. They have been opposed to central banking. They are opposed to income taxes. They're opposed to world government. And of course, they've been opposed to some secret societies because they go against their religion. There are those who are opposed to the Vatican because of the Catholics and their treatment of Protestants. There's those who don't like Jews because of, again, this concept of that the Jews killed Jesus. So that the Jews are bad. And of course, they're trying to take over the world. So when you look at all the evidence that's supposed to support this, again, like most conspiracy types who wants to make it sound like there's a conspiracy, they never really look at what really is going on. They never really examine alternatives to that ideas or alternative answers to the question if you take, for example, Agenda 21, one of the concepts, and Agenda 21 has to do with sustainable population and development. And part of and in the document, they propose that city planners plan their cities where you can, that would support, where you can sustainably support a population within a certain area. When you build a new development, or you incorporate a new into a new piece of property or whatever into your city, that the property should be used to the best advantages. Now, if it means it would support a population of 1,000, you design to 1,000 people. If it can support 1 million people, build it to 1 million people. And if that means bringing certain, to do that and to do it efficiently, bringing in sustainable transportation, trains, buses, whatever, electrified subways, whatever it takes to support that population, and to encourage certain areas that can support a large population. In many cases, places like Los Angeles, San Francisco may not necessarily can support 10 million people, 20 million, or whatever that might come along because of water shortages and so on, whereas Chicago could support 20 million people because of ready access to fresh water, transportation, jobs, so on. That's what Agenda 21 is about. It's not about force relocating people. It's not about exterminating people to make us open up spaces. Nothing about that. But of course, the conspiracy theorists like to tell you that it's what the UN is doing is to exterminate people. No, they're telling you, here's how to design your cities to be the most efficient, the most sustainable that they can be. And unfortunately, people don't understand this. And the conspiracy theorists know this, that people don't understand that you can't put 10 million people in the middle of the desert. There's no way. But you can put them near a large lake, maybe give them whatever, either close access to water source or a sustainable water source, or relatively cheap aqueduct system or whatever you need to do. And there's nothing in Agenda 21 about exterminating people, but people don't like the United Nations. That this is what you get. So most, like I said, most of this New World Order Illuminati conspiracy is a lot of BS. There's not a lot there to really say that there's anything evil going on with these secret societies. It's possible because they're secret societies. We're not supposed to know what's going on inside their doors. But a lot of these that are being claimed to be secret societies are not secret societies. The Trilaterals and the Council on Foreign Relations are two of these. They're supposedly Illuminati organizations. They're supposed to be secret. No, they publish everything that they do. The Council on Foreign Relations publishes a magazine monthly, and it lists, it's a journal on foreign relations. It's an organization that looks at the world, how the United States should interact with the rest of the world. And of course, the rest of the world to react with us or with amongst themselves. These are mostly ideas. It's a scientific journal, almost. Shouldn't say it that way, but it is a journal to convey information. So, like I said, it's, you know, a lot of this stuff, it's kind of make-believe. Some of the factual stuff is pretty almost like non-starter type stuff. I mean, yes, Adam Weishaupt created the Bavarian Illuminati. There are Freemasons. Freemasons have been around for a while. There are Skull and Bones, which is another secret society I didn't talk much about, but the hundreds that have been in the Skull and Bones have gone on to fairly high-profile jobs, probably through their networking within that organization. Some like to say the CIA was built out of a Skull and Bones meeting. But needless to say, probably, again, it's just a group of college kids forming up a fraternity to act weird, I guess. But it's nothing. Again, there's nothing nefarious about Skull and Bones. These conspiracy types have created this fear. You know, secret societies are running things. No, they're not. But, you know, they'll make up what you need to hear. And so to kind of wrap things up here, and probably the real facts of the Illuminati is that these were a group of people who had embraced the ideas of rationalism. They began to embrace the new scientific discoveries. They began to reject mysticism, and really were the forefathers of the Enlightenment. Much of what we have today has been part of Enlightenment thinking. The United States and its capitalist system was set forth by Adam Smith, who was an Enlightenment philosopher. And even the United States itself is an Illuminati idea. This concept of inalienable rights, life, liberty, pursuit of happiness, built into our Constitution are Illuminati concepts. Even the structure of our Bill of Rights, you know, that the right to free expression, the right to government not interfering with religion, are Illuminati ideas. So it almost seems hypocritical that these guys who have claimed patriotism, they support the Constitution, they've pinned to themselves this patriotic moniker, but they oppose to the Illuminati and this New World Order, which, of course, these were the guys that created their Constitution. So basically, you know, it really messes with their credibility. They don't understand what they're talking about. They're just talking about it to talk about. And that's really, I think, what comes down to. Guys like Alex Jones makes a fortune off of these stories. So I think I will close with that. And pretty much in closing, there is nothing really going. This Illuminati conspiracy is really, it's just a lot of make-believe. It's fantasy. And there's a lot of fantasy and conjecture. And there's no way to prove any of it. So this conspiracy has legs. It is actually self-sustaining. So until something goes one way or another, you know, at some point, the Illuminati comes out and says, "Yeah, we're real. We're going to take over the world." But you know, it's not going to happen. You know, if something like that happened versus probably what really happened is you people have been chasing, you've been chasing your tail so long. It's just so funny. There, as far as I'm concerned, there is really nothing to this conspiracy.
I can no longer sit back and allow communist infiltration, communist indoctrination, communist subversion, and the international communist conspiracy to sap and impurify all of our precious bodily fluids.
The only announcements I have for this show is that first I'm going to be on a 3-week stint this time, so it'll be 3 weeks before the next podcast come out. I haven't really decided what the topic is either, so we'll see how that goes. And this show is coming out later than I was hoping. Just finally got through some computer issues, so I should be on track there. And some good news, I checked out iTunes reviews and got two more 5-star reviews, one from John F. and one from Madcap. And I really do appreciate you and anyone who's given me 5-star reviews. Even the 1-star reviews are okay. It does help me point me in the right direction and keep me going. And I do appreciate John F.'s comments about my storytelling ability and how I'm beginning to almost as good as Dan Carlin. I listen to Dan Carlin quite a bit, and I'm trying to be more like him. You know, that seems to be the gold standard in history podcasting. It does sound like I'm on the right track here. And I don't have anything else, so thank you for listening, and be sure to check me out on the Reverend Skeptics podcast, the Bitch Spot Report, and I appreciate everyone's support. And we'll talk to you in 3 weeks. Thank you for listening to A Skeptic's Guide to Conspiracy. You can find my show notes and links to research material at mikebohler.com. That's MikeBohler.com. Feel free to leave me feedback at feedback@mikebohler.com. If there's a conspiracy you're interested in or wish to contribute more information to this or previous topics, feel free to send that to research@mikebohler.com. A Skeptic's Guide to Conspiracy is a proud member of the Dumbass Media Network. Be sure to check out other great podcasts at dumbassmedia.info. Intro music is Unchained Zarina from danosongs.com. Thank you for listening, and we will see you next time. Thank you. Good night.